Welcome to Unique Connections at the Table. I'm Dr. Beverly Samways, and each episode we invite you to join the conversation and discover new ways of seeing the world, particularly in relation to those with learning disabilities. So pull up a chair, the table's set, and we're so glad you're here.
So I'm here with Dr. John Kiesler from Indiana University, who I was able to spend a couple of days with last week. So John's been researching trauma-informed care in services with people with intellectual disabilities for 10 years, about 10 years?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and has a professional background in delivering direct support, similarly to my background. So we've been talking all sorts of about the implications of how this actually works in practice. So I thought it was a good opportunity to get you on, John, and to get you talking about trauma-informed care, like what we mean, what are the challenges, why is it important, all those kinds of things. So do you want to just say a little bit about how you got into this and like, I guess, why, like, you started writing and publishing about this, like, you know, really early on when, I mean, people are starting to talk about it now, but it still feels quite new. But what, like what led you to wanting to research and to publish about this stuff?
I've been involved in the field of intellectual and developmental disabilities since the 1990s. And, you know, I had various positions, direct support professional, a behavioral specialist, and then I was a coordinator and then administrator in behavioral healthcare services. And that really fueled me to look more closely at the experiences of staff and how we could potentially do things differently. Simultaneously, when I was doing my graduate studies, both my MSW and doctoral degree at the University of Buffalo, I became acquainted with the Institute on Trauma and Trauma-Informed Care, if you will. And I began to think about, well, maybe this presents an opportunity for us to do things a little differently. There had been no discussion really in the literature around trauma-informed care and intellectual and developmental disability services and what that looked like. And so I had actually published the first article talking about integrating trauma-informed care within this population and providing a justification as to why it was needed. So much of that was really influenced by my own struggles navigating complex organizations, meeting complex needs of individuals, managing challenging behavior, staff turnover, and my own sense of burnout with the work that I was doing.
Yeah. So when we talk about trauma-informed care in these services, like beginning to embed it in, beginning to, like, I guess, transform an organization so it's trauma-informed, like, what do we actually mean? Because a lot of times what I think both in the UK and the US, what that is understood as is having some training, like a bit more like trauma awareness. So having some training so that staff understand what trauma is and what it isn't and how it might present. But that's not really what we're talking about, are we? We're talking about something like more comprehensive than that. So what is it from you? Because you've written quite a lot about what this actually looks like in organisations.
Well, an important part of trauma-informed care definitely is staff training and training for all members of an organization. But it's not just training. You have to have a common understanding of what trauma is, recognizing the signs of trauma, recognizing the prevalence of trauma. Mm-hmm. And here in the United States, at least 70% of adults by the time they reach, you know, at least 70% of adults will experience at least one traumatic event during their lifetime. So mm-hmm. trauma-informed care really is about recognizing how common trauma is. And it's a shift in mindset because for many years, trauma was seen as something outside the scope of normal human experiences. And quite frankly, trauma is really quite common. And for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities, that can be exacerbated by various circumstances and situations, whether that's receiving care from an organization or having differences in communication skills or cognitive abilities, and being victimized or by people providing support or care. So it can be magnified for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. But again, that's really only part of it. It's about recognizing how systems can be organized around trauma, and staff can be functioning from their own level of trauma, and how these things intersect. Trauma-informed care is about recognizing that we need to do things differently. We need to shift from the typical day-to-day minutiae of things and staff having power and clients receiving services to really recognizing the common humanity of all people within an organization. And that means that relationships are important to all of us. Relationships are not only oftentimes the context for trauma, but relationships are the source of healing for trauma.
So good.
Our policies and procedures need to consider the principles of trauma-informed care. Fundamentally, those are safety, choice, collaboration, empowerment, and trustworthiness. They need to be transparent. They need to be implemented and accessible by all people and understood, and really need to focus on growth rather than punitive measures. Putting resources in place to foster development and moving organizations forward. You have to have leadership that's willing to do the work and wanting to do the work and understanding the challenges that both clients and staff are experiencing. It's about collaboration with other organizations in the community to create a seamless system of supports and services, and making resources available, again, not only for clients, but also for staff. We know that people in the helping professions oftentimes have higher levels of adversity and trauma compared to the general population. There's a reason why we get into the helping professions,
Yeah, there is.
but we need to be mindful of what we're bringing to that table and how we can be triggered in that process of providing care. So really, trauma-informed care is a system-wide approach to recognizing that most of us have experienced trauma. Most of us have been changed by trauma. And that change can influence how we do everything. And really taking the time to see that as a possibility, and to say, how can I help you? One, what has happened? And how can I help you move forward? And really valuing healthy relationships as the source of healing and growth. So again, yes, trauma-informed care is about training, but it's about a lot more than that. SAMHSA, the Substance Abuse Mental Health Services Administration, put forward 10 domains for organizational change, and I mentioned a number of them here. The other part is really evaluation, is you've got to understand where your organization is at. You have to have a baseline. There are some organizational measures out there that have been, psychometric studies have been done, so they're valid and reliable to help providers understand where am I at when it comes to trauma-informed care? Where are we at with staff attitudes or organizational practices that align with trauma-informed care? Using that as a baseline to help inform the initiatives for organizational change and really adopting that trauma-informed care practices and philosophy.
That's so good. Just want to like drill down into some of the things that you said, because there's some like real gold there. So you talked about that relationships are often the source of a trauma, but they're also the vehicle for recovery from a trauma. And I think that's such an important thing to hold in mind, isn't it? Because when somebody has experienced a trauma through relationship, it's not just that they want to cognitively, but their whole nervous system will begin to withdraw them relationally, and connection will become much more problematic. And so we might be presented with somebody who's hostile, defensive, closed off, and yet there's no spontaneous recovery from that presentation outside of therapeutic and healing relationships. And so that we have to find a way back in to building relationships with someone, even when they're presenting to us that they don't need or want one, because this is the meaningful way forward. And I think as well, this whole relational piece speaks to the work, because, and I think that since, both the UK and US have this long history of deinstitutionalization, where we realize that things have gone horrifically wrong in these institutions, that part of that process has been this very high level of professionalization of care and education that doesn't always face up to the fact that yes, we do need to be trained, and we do need to know what we're doing, we do need good information in our heads, but essentially, when we're offering care services and education services, the relationship is the foundation, and if it isn't there, we can't do the work. And I think post-COVID, this is why trauma-informed care is suddenly exploding, because all our relationships got battered, quite frankly. And we need to rediscover and put back in the center this relational piece, not in spite of the fact that we're all struggling relationally, because lots of us have had difficult experiences in the last few years. Not in spite of it, but because of it, because it is the relational piece that will bring back better, kinder, and more effective services that run better, and for those that are on the commissioning arm, cheaper. It's cheaper to run relationally secure and safe services.
Correct. So much of the dynamics around supporting people with intellectual and developmental disabilities is that relationship piece. You have to show up, you have to be present, you oftentimes have to be vulnerable. And I'm not suggesting that you put yourself in an unsafe situation, but vulnerable in such in a sense that you're open to the possibility of connecting. It's not just about being there physically, it's about being available and present spiritually, emotionally, cognitively, taking the time to understand the person beyond the diagnosis, beyond the disability, recognizing that we are all social creatures. We might communicate differently, we might interact differently, but we're all human beings. And the challenges with that connection can be made more profound by the presence of a disability, but that can be compounded further by the presence of trauma. We oftentimes have approached people with disabilities as they should trust us because we're the ones that are providing care, we're the ones with power. But I argue, why should they trust us? In many ways, they've experienced tremendous turnover in staff, and staff are a fundamental source of relationships for them. But simultaneously, when you have experienced trauma, it's difficult to feel safe, it's difficult to trust. And really, those are fundamental to trauma-informed care. We have to focus on creating spaces that are not only physically safe, but emotionally safe as well. And again, it's not just for the client, it's for the staff too. And so much of the service delivery model has been a top-down approach, and we need to focus more horizontally versus vertically.
And I think that's the piece it's both difficult to grasp and it's difficult to implement, isn't it? That we're not just talking about, let's help the team understand how to deliver care in a kind and compassionate way, but actually that doesn't work if there's no horizontal kindness, if the team themselves there's hostility between team members or between different teams as well in the organization, or it has to flow through the whole organization. And I think this is where, if for me, it feels like we're not talking about something that's easy to do, because it's not very concrete. We're talking about people's emotional and relational capacities. So I think of like you know, if you get, if you you can spend tens of thousands of pounds or dollars and put in an amazing sensory room, and you can see it, you know, you can walk in there and you can walk out, you know what you've got, it's concrete, and it feels like, yeah, we know where the money went and we know what we're doing with that. And similarly with a lot of the behavioral packages, you know, you can pad a lot of stuff out, but a lot of staff really, what they come out with is, they come out with, these are the holds I can do. Like, these are the ways I can move someone when they're out of control, because that's the concrete piece. I think one of the challenges about bringing this, like, these trauma-informed ideas to an organization is that we're talking about soft skills. We're not talking about, we're going to hand you some sensory equipment, or we're going to show some maneuvers to your staff that they can use. We're talking about, you know, safety, trust, empowerment, choice, collaboration. So how does that actually work, John? Like, I know you've done some consultancy with organizations to try and actually bring this into place. How does that, what does it actually look like for an organization to start to go on that journey?
Before I answer that question, I just want to take a step back to this idea of horizontal. And yes, I believe fully it's horizontally across staff, but I think it's also about elevating individuals with disabilities that we serve rather than the staff here and the clients here. We need to level that. Staff have expertise in certain areas, but so too do the individuals that we're supporting. And in order to honor that, we have to be on par. That doesn't mean that I lose anything as a staff. It means I gain something, gaining that opportunity to be more symbiotic, if you will, with the person I'm supporting, and that's giving that person the due placement and within that relationship. If we begin to see each other as equals, as human beings, then those power differentials become removed, and we are more likely to be able to work together in a humanistic, relational way by removing that sense of authority. But with that being said, the organizational change process is difficult. It is not easy. And it needs to begin with really leadership saying, this is the direction we want to move in. Leadership needs to allocate staff time, resources within the organization, money, and people to help drive the initiative at the organization. Without that leadership buy-in, it's just another training, if you will. The trauma-informed care's got to be beyond that. And leadership saying this is the direction we're moving in to create that momentum and the guidance for the organization to move in that direction. The next part, I think, is really creating a plan that's going to work for that organization. We do have standardized ideas of what trauma-informed care is. Yes, it can be challenging because it is more philosophical, it's more about the soft skills. But there are some well-defined components for that. But again, that may or may not work for an organization, especially organizations that provide 24/7 care. That is a huge challenge. I know we oftentimes focus on staff turnover and challenges with staffing now, but quite frankly, going back to even when I started in the field in the 90s, staffing was a challenge.
Yeah, that's true.
So that's not necessarily anything new. But I do think that people getting into the helping professions may have changed a bit. Technology has influenced all of this. So creating a plan that works for the organization, getting people together to help inform that plan, key stakeholders, from top down, bottom up. You need to understand the dynamics of the organization to create a plan that's going to work. What is the organization already doing? And here is some degree of assessment. What are they doing already that works well? Given that change is difficult, you need to leverage the strengths of the organization so that when you're pushing people to do something differently, you can also fall back on what they're doing well. Change can be very discouraging. And so while you're helping the organization to facilitate that change, you're developing those relationships. You have to constantly reinforce them because there's going to be some frustration. And it may feel very abstract to people. What is this about? Why are we doing this? What does this mean? The other thing, too, during that process of creating a plan to tailor to the organization is being mindful that when people are in times of stress, they're more likely to go back to what they know. They're more likely to revert to things that they've been doing for years. It's not because they're bad people. It's because we're creatures of habit and it's what we know. It's the same thing too with organizations. And it's all the more powerful, I think, because it's magnified at beyond the individual level. It's now at the organizational level. And research says that for change to really solidify with an organization, it can take years. So change is a slow process. We need to be, as consultants, as facilitators, as organizations, we need to be mindful of of that and be patient and kind with ourselves. Change is not easy at the individual level, nor at the organizational level. And that's just the way it is. It's okay. And I think slow and steady wins the race because we have to then, as we create that plan, to analyze policies and revise policies so that they're more in tune with trauma-informed care, that we deliver training for staff across the organization. We need to be getting feedback. We need to constantly take that in. We need time for reflection, time for application and reflection and critical thinking. What's working for us? What's not? And where do we need to do things differently? I believe that if you go in to an organization and you say, oh, trauma-informed care looks like this, and this is what we got to do, you might fail because trauma-informed care is about reaching people where they're at and moving them forward. And so when people have experienced trauma, when organizations have surrounded themselves and operate from a trauma perspective, we need to be mindful that we might not always get the response that we're hoping for. And we have to work through some of those dynamics.
And I guess that looks, we talked at the start of I guess I'm thinking about what does it, when we say an organization that's organized itself around trauma, like what are we talking about? And I guess that, if we think about somebody sort of classically maybe has PTSD and that sense of like hypervigilance, hostility, withdrawal, struggle to connect, a struggle to emotionally regulate, like those are the things we might see writ large over an organization. So, tension between departments or between the top and the bottom, we might see more sexism and racism breaking out, for instance, because the tribalism it is we become more tribalistic when the more frightened we are, and so we begin to blame anybody that looks or feels or acts differently from us, and then I guess we might see those like that those like so more incidents, almost like I've definitely had experience in the past of it feeling like, why did that happen? Like, why did that rat, like, why did that person who's normally so calm and trustworthy do that? That felt out of character. But we are out of character when we're like under massive amounts of pressure and we're dysregulated. So we're not talking about an organization that is so extreme that it would be unrecognizable, but actually, I've described things that probably a lot of us have seen occurring in particularly caregiving or educational organizations over time when the stress has mounted and they've gone into those like highly defensive mindsets. And of course, remembering that they are that like the trauma presentation is adaptive, it's a way to protect a person so that they can feel as safe as it's possible to feel. And I think of those organizations that weathered COVID, that continued to provide education, care, support all the way through COVID, they would have had to erect necessary defenses to protect themselves through a complete crisis. And that it's like some of the some organizations are able to recover and revert back to, a more ordinary way of operating. But some, I think, have taken such a hit in COVID that they're stuck in a essentially like organizational presentations of PTSD. That's
Yeah, I think with Sandra Bloom that said that organizations are living systems.
Yeah, exactly.
They're living organisms, and so they are vulnerable to the effects of trauma. And we know that there's some basic trauma responses. You described all the symptoms associated with PTSD, but even fundamentally, are our organizations ones that have frozen in time, that they're freezing in the face of moving forward. Are they fighting or are they fleeing? And I think that we need to be mindful of that. And in addition to COVID, too, the ongoing challenges with staffing, ongoing challenges with lack of resources and finances and potentially governmental cutbacks, all of these things over time have influenced the organizations that we're working with or part of, and they can have a cumulative effect. And so now let's combine that with clients who have experienced trauma and staff who have experienced trauma. And so you almost have a triple whammy, if you will, but it's not hopeless. And I think that's the other part about trauma-informed care, is that what we know about trauma is that healing and growth and recovery are possible. And so a sense of hope, and that which is broken can be fixed. That,
Certainly.
when safety has been disrupted, we can work to restore it. And that's really what it's about, is how do we either create organizations that have not had these basic elements, or how do we restore them once they've been disrupted?
And I think the reason that this like whole piece of work speaks to me is that I think, if we take a minute and think, any of us, why we ended up in these kinds of sectors, why we ended up in a care sector or an education sector or a mental health sector, it's because something inside us values relationship and connection and the people around us, and something inside us is like wired for that, wired for connection. And so this is why it's so painful, because it is painful, isn't it, for us when we're in organizations or we're affected by organizations where the relationships have, are struggling. But it's also the driver behind understanding that, just as you say, that the things that have become broken can be fixed, and the relationships that have broken down or become defensive can be restored. Because I think this is why, but we've all come in with different histories and different backgrounds and different valences for the work, but we're in it because we're wired for reconciliation. Like, I think from the get-go, and this piece of trauma-informed work, I think it speaks to the heart of this of the sectors that we're in, and so it feels not just necessary or helpful, but actually just fundamental. And you started, I think, talking about that, like that sense of shared humanity, and like getting back to that core.
Thanks so much for listening today. Before you go, can you help us with something? We want to make sure these conversations reach the people who need to hear them. So if there's someone you think would benefit from listening to this, we would just love it if you shared it. See you next time.